Krishna 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 Hare
Krishna 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 Krishna
Krishna Krishna Krishna Krishna Krishna Krishna Krishna
Krishna Krishna Krishna Krishna Krishna Krishna
Krishna Krishna Krishna Krishna Rakshama
Krishna 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 Rakshama
Krishna 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 Krishna
Some thought he's the super soul in every heart, and very few understood him as the original cause of all causes, even the originator of the super soul. So you're reading how, because the situation of the world was so distraught, that the predominating deity of the earth known as Bhumi, which is the Lord Brahma. Now, this is actually not such a surprising concept anymore. Some of you may know about that. How do you pronounce it? Gaia? You know how to pronounce it? Gaia. Right. In which people are thinking the earth is a living organism. This is old hat for those who understand the Vedic literatures. Just like you are a person in charge of your body, similarly the earth has a person in charge of it. That person's name is Bhumi. And because of the distresses she's feeling on her body, the earth, she's going to the head of the universe, Brahma. Everything is personal. It's not that this is just some aboriginal idea or indigenous people's idea that there's a person behind all the functions of nature. Why should you think there's not? Why is it that to think that there is some person behind the aspects of nature, that's primitive, and to think that it's just some impersonal force, that's advanced? Like so many of you are studying art, that's a very personal thing. Well, Prabhupada explained that nature is also artwork. Do you ever think about it that way? Now suppose someone went up to one of your artistic creations, or your painter, and said, oh, it's just the impersonal laws working here. You'd feel a bit insulted. Your artwork, your paintings are expression of your creativity. So, similarly, what you call nature is simply an expression of Krishna's perfect artwork.
You may appear in the shape of a hell and present yourself before the Lord Brahma with tears in her eyes. She was bereaved and was weeping just to invoke the Lord's compassion. She related to the calamitous position of the earth, and after hearing this, Lord Brahma became much aggrieved, and he at once started for the ocean of milk where Lord Vishnu resides. Lord Brahma was accompanied by all the demigods, headed by Lord Shiva, and Bhumi also followed. Arriving on the shore of the milk ocean, Lord Brahma began to pacify Lord Vishnu, who had formerly saved the earthly planet by assuming the transcendental form of the boar.
Yes, that refers to one of Krishna's other incarnations, the Varaha, the boar incarnation. Krishna can take any form. Krishna incarnates in all the different species. In Srimad Bhagavatam, you'll find the main incarnations, the most famous ones. However, just like it's impossible to count all the waves in an ocean, similarly it's impossible to count all the incarnations of Godhead. But it's not that anybody can just come along and say, I'm an incarnation. Any incarnations that can be recognized by human beings, they are all listed in Srimad Bhagavatam, even in advance. It's like you read about Lord Buddha in the Bhagavatam. Even before the appearance of Lord Buddha, he was predicted in Srimad Bhagavatam. Lord Buddha is a kind of incarnation of Krishna for the purpose of bewildering the atheists. Because the atheists were using the Vedas as an excuse to sacrifice animals, to kill animals. They were saying that the Vedas recommend animal sacrifice. So they were using that as an excuse to kill animals. Therefore, Krishna, out of compassion on the animals, came as Lord Buddha and said, don't follow the Vedas. Nonviolence is the highest religious principle. And Lord Buddha taught some doctrine about how to free yourself from material existence, but then it stopped right there. Not teach anything beyond freedom from material existence. So people, of course, did not know what to do after you free yourself from material existence. After you attain nirvana, what is that? So, in any case, by following Lord Buddha, people are actually glorifying Krishna, and they get some benefit in that way. All the avatars and incarnations, they're all mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam. But Buddha, he's Krishna's mercy on the atheist, because Buddha didn't teach anything directly theistic. And there are a class of people who, they think they're interested in spiritual knowledge as long as it doesn't involve any kind of personal supreme. So they really get lost in all the metaphysical analyses that Buddha taught. And they never think that, well, now that I've analyzed my life this way and that way, I know what causes suffering. They never think that they don't know what causes real pleasure. All they know is that cessation of suffering, that's where it's at. Real pleasure, however, is beyond simply the mere cessation of suffering. I've given the example so many times. Let's say you spent your whole life banging your head against the wall, and finally someone convinced you not to do it anymore, that it was causing you great pain. So you stop banging your head against the wall. All right. Now is that pleasure? Just that you stopped. Of course you'll feel some relief for a while that you stopped smashing your head against the wall. But now what do you do with yourself? So the teachings of Lord Buddha will give you some temporary feeling of relief because you stopped smashing your head against the wall. But what do you do with your head? Buddha didn't teach that. His teachings are for those who are basically attracted to atheistic understandings and just want some relief from material existence without any kind of bhakti, love and devotion. Well, that's one avatar, one incarnation, and there's also the Boar incarnation. You can read about the Boar incarnation in the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Reader? Joe?
In the Vedic mantras, there is a particular type of prayer called Purusha Sukta. Generally, the demigods offer their obeisances unto Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by chanting the Purusha Sukta. It is understood herein that the predominating deity of every planet can see the Supreme Lord of this universe, Brahma, whenever there is some disturbance on this planet, on his planet. And Brahma can approach the Supreme Lord Vishnu not by seeing him directly, but by standing on the shore of the ocean of milk. There is a planet within this universe called Svetadvipa, and on that planet there is an ocean of milk. It's understood in various Vedic literatures that just as there is the ocean of salt water on this planet, there are various kinds of oceans on other planets. Somewhere there is an ocean of milk, somewhere there is an ocean of oil, and somewhere there are oceans of liquor. Many other types of liquids. The Purusha Sukta is a standard prayer which the demigods recite to appease the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Kshiro da Kasaya, no, Kasaya.
Shirdakshaya Vishnu.
Yeah. And say it again.
Siddhartha.
Because he is lying on the ocean of milk, he is called
Shirdakshaya Vishnu.
He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, through whom all the incarnations within this universe appear.
So does that sound fairy tale to you that there's an ocean of milk? Angela, what do you say?
No, not really, because when I was younger I always used to dream of oceans of chocolate and unicorns. I always thought they existed.
There's so many things that you haven't seen in this universe. Okay, Angela.
After all the demigod offers the Purusha Sukta, proof of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they apparently do no response. Then Lord Brahma personally sat in meditation, and there was a message transmission from Lord Vishnu to Brahma. Brahma then broadcast the message to the demigod. That is the system of receiving Vedic knowledge. The Vedic knowledge is received first by Brahma from the Supreme Personality of Godhead through the medium of the heart. As stated in the beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam,
Kine Brahmahidaya Adikavaye.
The transcendental knowledge of the Vedas was transmitted to Lord Brahma through the heart. Here also, in the same way, only Brahma could understand the message transmitted by Lord Vishnu, and he broadcast it to the demigods for their immediate action. The message was this: the Supreme Personality of Godhead would appear on the earth very soon, along with his supreme powerful potency, and as long as he remained on earth, on the earth planet to execute his mission of annihilating the demons and establishing the devotees, the demigod should also remain there to assist him. They should also immediately take birth in the family of the Yadu dynasty, wherein the Lord would also appear in due course of time. The Supreme Personality of Godhead himself, Krishna, would personally appear as son of Vasudeva. Before his appearance, all the demigods, along with their wives, should appear in different pious families in the world just to assist the Lord in executing his mission. The exact word used here is
Piyatam.
Piyatam, which means the demigod should appear on earth in order to precede the Lord. In other words, any living entity who lives only to satisfy the Lord as a demigod. The demigods were further informed that the plenary portion of Lord Krishna, Nanta, who is maintaining the universal planet by extending his millions of souls, would also appear on earth before Lord Krishna's appearance. They were also informed that the external potency of Vishnu, Maya, with whom all the conditioned souls are enamored, would also appear by the Lord, by the order of the Supreme Lord, just to execute his purpose.
Also, some of the demigods come to Earth, like Brahma.
Sure, they can go anywhere.
So,
but you don't see them now because the people of this present day and age are so sinful. The background of good karma enough to see these demigods.
So when they came to Earth, they're still present, running the Earth, like Brahma is in control of this universe.
So you think that they travel around and everything collapses?
Yeah, they're kind of dropping their job there and kind of...
No, it's not like that.
They can do both things at once.
Yeah. Even somebody, some businessman can go away and his business still runs.
Oh,
like your boss goes on vacation sometimes, right?
Yeah.
Just, you just make sure that you don't go on vacation, right? So when are you, you're finishing your, with, oh, your plan is you're going to go on working and you'll stay at the ashram?
I'm not sure.
I'll actually ask you. Mm. Alright. Okay. By the way, how's everyone doing with it? I know Clayton here, he's chanting very nicely. Anyone else chanting? Are you chanting them? Are you chanting them? Do you chant a bit, Angel?
Yeah, I'm practicing meditation.
Everybody's meditating on something.
Yeah.
What are you meditating on?
The Supreme.
What do you mean by that?
I use what I said before, which was a little
closer. So how do you do that meditation? You just kind of...
I'm just practicing focusing my mind, actually.
Yeah.
I'm practicing focusing my mind.
On what?
Because I just told you.
On what?
on Prama Purusha.
On who?
On Prama Purusha.
How do you do that? Karma means supreme, Purusha means person.
Yeah.
So please describe this Prama Purusha that you're meditating on.
I'm still learning, actually, but...
just like it... you know, if I told you that, you know, I'm meditating on Angela, then the next question you would ask me was, okay, well, you know, describe, right? And I would say, she's wearing red trousers and she has a ring on and she looks tired a lot and fatigued at such a young age and... Yeah, so if I ask you, if you tell me you're meditating on Paramaparusha,
yeah,
then you please describe...
Finding the place of this effect? Would they mind?
No. You're meditating on Parama Purusha, so you please tell me about this Parama Purusha that you're meditating on and focusing your mind on.
I'd like to fix myself now. I'm meditating on finding the Supreme within my heart and in order to help me sort of establish where I'm at personally.
How do you find the
Supreme within your heart? You meditate.
On what?
On the feeling of love and
we're really getting way out there now. Feeling of love.
Yeah.
So how do you do that? You get a good boyfriend or what?
No.
Wow, I do know love, you know, makes the world go around. So, you know, you just made it on a loving feeling, huh?
Yeah, to
what you do, you kind of you play the record, you lost the loving feeling. Oh my God, I'm so happy.
No, not quite. No, I find once I reach a calm stage, then I'm in order to appreciate things more.
Calm state.
Hmm?
I'm trying to get into a calm state.
Yeah, you calm my mind.
No, I'm just trying to understand you. You know, I'm not. I'm just trying to understand.
No?
So, how do you put yourself into a calm state?
By only focusing on one thing.
Oh, like what?
Like infinite love.
What's that?
That's what I'm trying to catch a glimpse of.
Can you give us some understanding of what? Are you even a little taste of it? Infinite love.
It's the energy that drives the universe.
Energy that drives the universe.
Yeah.
You sure about that?
Yeah. Well, I mean that's a realization that I've come to. Oh,
well, you know everything about the universe.
No. I told you before. I'm still learning.
Where do you learn all these fuzzy notions from?
Different people. I'm learning meditation and Ashtanga yoga from.
Ashtanga yoga? Oh my God.
what
you know what Ashtanga yoga is? Ashtanga means eight. Anga means limbs.
Oh, really? Yeah.
You're learning Ashtanga? Really?
Yeah.
You sure about that?
Yeah.
What is it characterized by? Who's the teacher's name?
Rupnikosh.
You sure it's... Are you learning asanas?
Yeah.
That's Hatha yoga.
Okay.
Ashtanga yoga. Ashtanga means eight. Anga means limbs. First is yam niyam. That means things you should do and things you shouldn't do.
Yeah.
Then there's asanas. Eight limbs. Withdrawing your senses from the sense objects.
Yeah.
Are you doing that?
Yeah.
No.
No, sorry. I don't work that way.
Which Vedic literature are you following? So you talk about yoga, then you have to be talking about the Vedas. You can't be talking about anybody's speculation.
Yeah, I haven't read any Vedas myself.
So, then how do you know? I can come up to you and say, you know, if you want to find the Parama Purusha, you know, just put toothpaste in your ear.
Yeah.
You know? There's an authorized standard for everything.
Yeah.
How do you know? That's why we are educating people in the Vedic literature so they know the standard. Otherwise, there's so many people going around saying, do this, do that.
Yeah.
If you don't know, you'll simply be cheated.
Yeah, I'm actually reading a variety of literature at the moment.
But there must be a standard. That's fair enough. There must be a standard.
Yeah.
Therefore, if you're actually learning the standard, you'll know what is what. But the symptom that we don't know is when we start saying things like, you know, oh, the infinite love and the this and the that. That means we're getting spaced out, you know? Just like, if I know Angela, I will be able to describe her. Otherwise, I should just say I don't know. Suppose I said,
you would describe me differently from how somebody else would die.
If you want to understand the Parama Purusha, what is the best way, Juliet? True, but specifically, if I want to find out about you, what's the best way? Ask you, right? So if you want to understand the Parama Purusha, you take knowledge from the Parama Purusha. Has it ever dawned on you?
Yeah.
So in Bhagavad Gita, the Parama Purusha is speaking.
Yeah. Yeah,
so why do we need to rack our brains with speculation? Why don't we hear from the Parama Purusha, how to find the Parama Purusha within the heart? That is the best way. If I want to know you, I should ask you. Just like now, I'm asking you what you're doing. You're telling me.
Yeah.
I suppose I ask Clayton over here, what is Angela doing? He doesn't know, but you give me some speculation now. she probably
goes to some
Unitech, right, yeah, you're right, I heard that. Yeah, I agree with you. No, that sounds good, you know? You know, it's one of those schools, whatever. Unitech, AIT, you know? Yeah. Well, why do you think she goes to Unitech?
Some of the things, I think.
No, you know, she sells pickles at Unitech. Yeah. You can really get into it, you know?
Yeah.
Well, right while you're sitting there.
Yeah.
It's ludicrous, isn't it?
Yeah.
If we want to know what you're doing, we ask you.
But if you're doing everything, like if you're...
If we're doing everything...
Creator, then you...
If what?
In some form of doing everything.
What's that then?
Like, because you cause everything to happen.
Wait a minute. I lost you. I didn't tell my official place.
Oh, no, it's okay.
Wait. What did she say?
No, well, not if I am personally.
I thought I heard that, but then somebody told me I didn't hear that. You probably heard it. What did you say?
If I think she was going to the point that because Krishna is the causable cause of the Parampurusha, the causable cause of then he's causing her to feel the way she's feeling at the moment, and therefore she's on the right track.
We are independent.
It does come down to belief and faith and
trust. No, it does not. You must find out what is what. If I want to understand Angela, do I just say it comes down to belief and trust? I ask Angela.
Sorry, that's it. You don't
see
mysticism.
Mysticism means you don't know. That's all.
But we can't know everything.
You can if everything tells you. Who told you you can't know everything? You cannot say. You cannot. I hear so many.
No, I'm coming.
On your own, you cannot know everything. Therefore, how can you even say we can't know everything? You cannot say this way or that way. You understand?
Yeah, yeah.
But if the Supreme Everything, if the Parama Purusha, as you say, tells you, then you can know everything.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Therefore, you take knowledge directly from Krishna. There's no need to try to press your nose or put your ankle behind your neck or, you know, gaze at your navel or, you know. Or use all these vague words.
But that helps you.
Helps you to do what?
To get to that point of receiving knowledge.
You know, Clayton, I know it's going to help me to understand Angela. I think it'll help me understand her, if I simply, finds her body with a white dress and pour ketchup on it. It's really going to help me understand her. I think so. Yeah. You should agree with me. You should simply say, well, if it helps you to understand, go ahead. We can say anything, you see, but the point is, I want to understand Angela. She'll tell me the best way. She'll say, meet me at the AAS, is that what you call it? ASA or... whatever, you know. What do they call it? ASA? I'm studying painting there or whatever. So, what, if you want to understand the Parama Purusha, you hear from the Parama Purusha directly. What is the problem? But so many people have a problem at this point. And why do they have a problem? That is the reason why we're in this material world, because we are envious of Krishna. We don't want to hear from Krishna. We want to make our own way. Even so-called sadhus, holy men in India, India is full of persons who are practicing all sorts of quote-unquote mysticism, metaphysical knowledge, and they completely want to avoid Krishna. That means they go nowhere. So what if you have mystic powers? Big deal.
Yeah, I'm not really...
Therefore, unless we know what the standard is, what is it, we're wasting our time. Whether we call ourselves Maharaj or Swami or Dada or Rishi or Sage or Baba or this or that, doesn't matter. The whole point is, what is the standard? What does Krishna say, the Parama Purusha? So why should we listen to people speculate when we can hear from the Parama Purusha directly? And if you study Bhagavad Gita, you can see that no one can speak on that standard. And the real barrier to us understanding the Parama Purusha is our sinful activity. That's why Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Yesham Antakatam Bhavam Jnanam Punyakamanam. Only those that put a stop, complete stop, to their sinful activity can understand me. Your spiritual life begins when you stop sinful activity. Otherwise you don't have the brain to understand it. No matter how many asanas you do and how many words like infinite love you use, you cannot understand the Parama Purusha without putting a stop to sinful activity. But people today aren't even taught what is sinful activity. They don't care. And then some teacher comes along and says, oh, just press your nose like this and gaze at your navel and you'll find infinite love. Why not hear from infinite love himself? Isn't that the advantage?
Yes.
You know how to avoid someone?
How to avoid someone?
Yeah. Have you ever been pursued by someone you want to avoid?
Yes.
How do you do it?
Make myself unavailable to them.
So that's what we do to Krishna. We make ourselves unavailable to Krishna. And we get involved with everything except hearing from Krishna directly. And we, you know, oh, it's mystical, it's metaphysical. But all we're doing is avoiding Krishna. The same as the, anybody else, whether he's a politician or a factory owner or whatever. It all comes down to the same thing. If I want to know you, why should I avoid you? I come and ask you, how can I know you better? And you'll say, this is the way. And if I'm interested in knowing you, I'll follow that, right? But if I'm not interested, then I won't. It's like Clayton can say, there's Angela. Find out how to get to know her, how to get to know her better. And I'll say, what were you doing today? There's Angela. Ask her. What's she like? What was the score of that rugby match? There's Angela. Just listen to her. She's describing herself. Oh, you need to get your shoes fixed. You get the point? This is what we specialize in. How to avoid Krishna at all costs, at any cost. Even so-called mysticism, yoga, and spiritual teachers. And that's why we're in this world. We came here to avoid Krishna. And you can't do that in reality, so you're put in an illusory world where you can pretend you're avoiding Krishna. And you can mouth words like infinite love, and this and that, you know. And it's just, you know, meanwhile, go on with material life in a refined way. But if I really want to know you, I'll be serious about it, won't I? How are you? What do you do? What are your qualities? How can we please you so that you reveal more of yourself? But if I'm not, you know, I'll just avoid you. I can be very polite about it. In a very courteous way, I can just avoid you. Like Juliet can say, there's Angela. You can hear from her how she is. And I'll say something very polite like, aren't there too many people in this room right now? Or I'll say, aren't there other people in this room also? And so I'll just completely avoid you in a very nice, genteel way. Or I'll say, I want to be arrogant. Juliet will say, there's Angela. And I'll say, how dare her sit like that with her feet on the couch? Who does she think she is? So the biggest problem today is that people do not have a genuine spiritual education. And because they want to avoid Krishna, they're attracted to impersonalism. Even yogis, so-called yogis and ascetics, spiritual teachers, so-called, they become attracted to impersonalism because they want to avoid Krishna, just like the karmic worker does. It's not that I am making this up. It's not my opinion. We teach Bhagavad Gita as it is. Bhagavad Gita is the standard Vedic text. We do not teach Bhagavad Gita as we would like it to be. If I do that, then I'm doing the greatest disservice. This is not my opinion. What's the use of my opinion? We teach what the Parama Purusha says. Now what's the use in talking about Parama Purusha, when we completely avoid what the Parama Purusha says? It's crazy. Just like you can talk and you can write books, Krishna also speaks. Krishna can speak in books. But we don't want to hear from Krishna. We rather just speculate about this and the that. So what do you hope to gain? I mean, I'm speaking like this because you're an intelligent person. It's nothing personal, you understand? I'm just trying to help. If I didn't care, I wouldn't say anything. So what is your goal right now?
Right now,
so you're kind of open to anything, huh? You're just checking everything out.
Yeah.
Huh. All right. So be open to what I just said. The best way to hear, you mentioned Parama Purusha. So you hear from Parama Purusha. Now, how many places do you go to that they say, we teach you what Parama Purusha says? Parama Purusha says?
The Jagarushi that I go to, they teach me through. It's like an ashram.
So they tell you, we are going to teach you what Parama Purusha says?
through people
who have
been enlightened.
Parama Purusha speaks for himself.
Yeah, well, not like through books.
Books?
Like
then you read Bhagavad Gita.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Prabhupada does not write his own books. What you have in your hand here is a summary study of Srimad Bhagavatam. It's Vedic literature.
Yeah.
He doesn't write his own books. He doesn't write, I think, and when I was enlightened, I realized this and that. That's the first time. Good thing you said.
Talking about the purport.
Huh?
I guess that was the
main thing. The purport is simply amplification of what Krishna says. That's all this. But you know, there's nothing new.
Yeah. Well, you wouldn't consider him tainted.
Huh?
You wouldn't consider him tainted at all, or?
Of course not. Krishna can speak for himself. You can speak. If you gave me knowledge of yourself, should I consider it tainted?
No.
You consider yourself an expert on yourself, don't you?
No.
Yes. So, Krishna can also be expert on himself. So if we're actually... So my point, my question once again is, where else do you go where you can learn from the Parama Purush? I don't say, in my opinion. I don't say, when I was enlightened, I realized that such and such. No, we say, in Bhagavad Gita, the Parama Purusha says like this and that. That is the standard for spiritual science. Otherwise, forget it. You may develop some mystic powers, you may develop some good karma, you may learn a little bit about the impersonal white light, how to merge with that, but forget Parama Purusha unless you take information from the Parama Purusha and do as the Parama Purusha instructs. So if you want the Parama Purusha, then you listen to the Parama Purusha. But some people have a problem with that. They come here and say, all you guys do is just quote Krishna says this, Krishna says that. No, it's not free enough. We want to speculate. If you want the Parama Purusha, I mean Supreme Person, then you hear from the Supreme Person. Just like now, we're reading the Krishna book. Supreme Personality of Godhead, that means Parama Purusha. Where else can you go to hear about the activities of the Parama Purusha? What do you think you're doing now? You're hearing about the activities of the Parama Purusha.
Yeah.
Yeah, very good, yes. Fine talking to you.
Yeah.
Now, where else do you go? Where you hear directly from the Parama Purusha, where you hear the activities, qualities of the Parama Purusha, where else do you go for that? Where else teaches you the qualities and activities of the Parama Purusha? You can't remember that. That means forget it. You never learned it anywhere else. You don't have to think about it if you actually learn.
Yeah, yeah.
If you actually been taught that, you don't have to think about it.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever leave here with any, you know, even whether you accept Krishna or not, do you ever leave here thinking, you know, did I hear anything about the Parama Purusha? Are they talking about the Parama Purusha? You never leave here with that kind of... Because we are authorized. You don't waste your time. So the problem with going to India is there's something...